Almost Relevant, Episode 2.
Hello, and welcome to the Almost Relevant Podcast, where we delve into any rabbit hole, no matter how deep. The podcast for everything nerdy and geeky. I'm Elliot Lee.
And I'm Jeremy Collier. In today's episode, we're going to talk about living or reliving in a different era. So, obviously, today is the year 2014.
Hold on, wait, let me check.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so this year is 2014. Unless you're listening to this in the future, then of course, it's not 2014.
But it won't be the future for them, it'll be the present for them.
So that's true.
Then they're listening to the past.
All this wibbly-wobbly time stuff, for those of you who don't know, that's a Doctor Who reference. We're recording this in the year 2014, and this is a subject that Elliot brought up a while back, just kind of like, well, you know, a lot of people say that they would want to be alive in different eras, so it got us kind of thinking, you know, like, what would it be like to be alive in a different era? And it basically brings up two questions. So let's just start with this. Without thinking, Elliot, what area would you want to live or relive in?
Well, see, that's the big thing. Living and reliving.
Okay, so let's make it a little more specific. What era would you want to live in? So then that would take away the 80s and 90s and 2000s for us.
Okay, well, being of my ethnicity, I don't think, you know, Chinese people really had all that great in the Americas in the 1800s. So I'd probably rule that out. So I think I would rather look forward. You know, let's look ahead. Let's see life would be like, say, 2050, 2100.
So
if the world's still, you know, around then.
So just slight future.
I think so. I think slight future. Something, you know, that I, well, I mean, you know, the way technology is somewhat exponential. So
yeah.
I don't know how much of life would be recognizable to me. You know, a good 30 plus years in the future.
Well, okay. So then what I'm hearing is, although this takes it to the extreme, but Futurama kind of.
A little bit, yeah.
Because it's kind of like you're thinking of that culture shock. That although 30 years, 40 years from now shouldn't have too much of a culture shock on you.
Yeah, but if you think back, you know, 30 years ago, I mean, you know, look at what we do today and how that would be so off the wall for everyone else.
That's true. But they also say that technology has slowed down a lot in the last 5-10 years, and it's going to continue to slow down. There's still going to be
advances. So it's a logarithmic function.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm using math.
It's
increasing at a decreasing rate.
Yes. There's diminutive returns.
Diminishing returns.
I don't know what that means.
What's that mean?
So basically, it's like, yes, technology has advanced over the last, let's just say, 100 years exponentially, but it's not going to continue in that same rate, and it's already slowed down. So with that in mind, I see 30 years from now as being mostly what we have today, just better.
I just want a robot servant.
That'd be awesome. They actually have one of those for the school I teach in. I'm teaching Lego robotics, and I've done a lot of research on them, and there's actually a servant robot that is, they have concept, I think you could even buy like early versions of it, but it's actually something made mainly for elders and stuff like that helps you in the house.
Yeah, but when you think 30-ish, 35 years from now, I think, you know, it's going to be a lot more available to the general public.
I do think robotics is one of those right now that is going to continue to go exponentially. As where technology as a whole over the last 30, 40, 50 years has gone exponentially, I think only certain aspects of technology will continue that direction. Mm-hmm. Computers are not going to get much better. In 30 years, sure, you're going to have, it's not, I mean, compared to now, they're going to be more powerful.
Right.
But it's not going to be like
it's
the 1980s to the 2010s, mm-hmm. that big of a dramatic difference. It's going to be more like it just keeps getting a little better by little. But robotics, I think, is one of those things that's going to be 30 years from now, we're not going to recognize.
They're only going to get better from there on.
Yeah. So I see your point in that, and that's kind of interesting. The book you, The Feed, that's set in,
Supposedly about 100 years from when it was written, so which was written about 2000, 2001.
Okay, so about the year 2100.
2100. Somewhere around there.
I don't think we've mentioned The Feed on this podcast?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, The Feed is basically a futuristic book that Elliot was reading for school, and it has a lot to do with social media and...
Media in general.
Media, yeah. And how it's part of, it's ingrained in life. And what the scary part is, I have not read it yet, although it's on my to-do list. The scary part is how accurate it's already starting to become, and it's only been 10, 12 years, 15 years. And so imagine, you know, if that trend continues, that it will be that way in the future. But anyway, so another book that comes into mind, and now I'm going to blank on the name. The two authors are Platt and Truant. I know you haven't heard of it, but... Oh, what's it called? I forgot the name of it, but I will look it up right now. But anyway, it's basically a futuristic, but it's not so far in the future. It's like a realistic future where just that. It's, you know, what would life be like in 50 years, 100 years? Uh-huh. And it's like certain things have advanced.
Well, so is this a fiction? Or?
Yeah, it's fiction. Certain things have advanced in the sense that, you know, like... I think they have like a transportation system that can get you across the whole world quick, you know, stuff like that. But it's like they run into a lot of the same.
But is it in like kind of a realistic manner?
Yeah, yeah.
So like bullet train type of.
Yeah, know? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm not getting beamed up anywhere anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. But it's in the same vein of like this could actually be like it is, you know, after this in a few years, well, 30, 40 years. So my whole point in bringing that up is I actually did not expect you to say a future time.
Really?
I expected you to go backwards.
Well, let's, you know, think about this for a bit. Again, so if I'm thinking more on, like, a realistic level, if I were to go back in time, assuming I'm still Chinese... I feel I'm a little bit limited on good options. You know, I can't really go like to a medieval era in, you know, Europe. I think I'd kind of stand out a little bit. However, you know, I am not really taking into account for Chinese history because let's say I'm in China at the time. Well, I'm not royalty.
That's true.
So, in that sense, it's kind of You know what, let's just look forward. I don't really see a whole lot in the past that's something that I'd be interested in experiencing. I think let's see what the future offers.
I guess another surprising thing would be that you picked such a close future. Because if I was to go future, I would probably go further.
Would you do the whole Futurama thing, a full 1,000 years?
I don't know if I'd go 1,000 years. I guess... I would have to say I would like to go to a time where space travel was something your everyday person could do.
Well, that's potentially yeah, in like 35 years.
But not so far as like Star Trek Enterprise, where it was like these massive ships and colonies all over the place. I would want to be more like... Mass Effect or the Enterprise.
Uh-huh.
Remember, it's like space travel or I don't know if you ever watched the anime. I don't think you have. Cowboy Bebop?
I think you mentioned it to me and I tried watching a couple episodes, but I can't get into anime.
Or Firefly.
No. Although, everyone always speaks so highly of it. I've just never given it a chance.
Yeah, as hard as life is in those shows, I think that if I went to the future, that's not my pick for where I would want to go, but if I did go into the future, it would be something like that. More like that everyone's out there everyone could be out there in space, but it's not the safest area. It's that whole space opera. You know, like the cowboy.
So it's still kind of
Mass Effect.
A bit of a frontier stuff.
Yeah, frontier. Yeah, yeah. So that would be my future. But actually, my pick for... were you done talking about
future?
So my... Oh, before we go on, the name of the book that I was actually talking about is called The Beam. And it's by Sean Platt and Johnny B. Truant. Gotta love his... what are they called? It's not his real name. It's his author name.
Oh, pen name?
Pen name. I love his pen name. Johnny B. Truant.
Hmm.
Anyway, yeah, and actually the
Does
first...
Does Johnny B. Good?
I think of that every single time. The first episode, because they actually do episodic books, the first episode is actually free on pretty much anywhere, so if you want to check it out, it's called The Beam, And I have not read it yet, so I'm actually going to leave. I'm not going to say any more about it right now because it might be something I want to discuss in the future. But yeah, go check it out. I love those guys. They're amazing authors, so definitely something to check out if you're interested in that kind of thing.
So you, it sounds like you, well, obviously that you're not looking more towards the future, but more of a pastime that you would like to experience. So what would that time era be?
Well, okay, so here's the problem with the living or choosing an era to live in. And it's something we're going to go into after I talk about it. But my mindset is, again, the kind of what came up for this episode was, well, do I know what I know now? Or is it just I was born in that era and live in that era?
Ooh, yeah.
So we're kind of taking liberty right now and saying that I was just born and lived in that era.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I would want to go to the medieval times.
Okay.
And I know it's unrealistic because, like, history books say that it's pretty much impossible to move up in the caste system. Mm-hmm. But I always felt like I could go, I'd be one of those people, you know, in those stories that could go from a peasant to a knight, you know?
Yeah.
I know it's unrealistic, but I always felt like that would be me, or be like a bard, or a storyteller.
Did you just recently watch A Knight's Tale or something?
No, but that is a great movie. I love that movie.
It was alright.
I know it's not the best movie, but I love the movie. But I'd be like a scribe, or a bard, or something like that. I mean, something to where...
So you would have been a nerd then, too?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Can't deny it. But yeah, I think basically, either of those, like, Either like knight. I wouldn't really want to be royalty.
Okay.
Because I think the royalty, yeah, they, you know, they could party all the time, they no worries, but at the same time, just like now, it's like, for me, what kind of life is that? I don't want that life.
Mm-hmm. So a lack of purpose.
Yeah, a lack of purpose. As where, you know, like a storyteller, a scribe, or a bard, they're kind of like, they have a purpose in entertainment, or, you know, scribes can be both entertainment and logistical stuff. And then knights, of course, were very important.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I would want to live in that era, it, for a lot of reasons. But I also think that there's something fantastical about that era today.
Okay.
Not that it was like that back then, but, you know, you watch all these movies, even the ones that are like not overly what's the word I'm looking for? Like, don't, even the ones that don't paint it in a pretty picture.
Okay, so we'd say that era is kind of romanticized.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I call it fantasized. But yeah, romanticized. That's the word I was looking for. So it's an era that's romanticized today. And
okay, I can see that. Kind of like how samurais are also kind of
romanticized. Yeah, samurais would be my other choice. And I have in my head, I have a better picture of what it was really like to be a samurai, because I've actually done the research on my own. Medieval I have too, but it's like so many medieval movies, like, you know...
So in other words, you want to be Tom Cruise?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
that's a reference to Last Samurai.
I love that movie too.
I do too, even though I want to hate it.
Yeah, I know.
I want to hate it, but I can't.
I know. So yeah, so I'd probably go back to medieval times, but I don't think. And this gets into the whole logistical thing of is okay. Let's talk about that. This is kind of off topic, but that's what our whole podcast is about. So let's change it a little bit, and because I know we have something else to talk about, but let's change it a little bit and look at, if you could go to any time, or if, not go to any time, if you could live in any time, but have that era set in a more romantic, not romantic, sorry, fictional, fantasy world. So, like, for example, if I went to medieval time, I would want it to be in a time where... religion was not the rule.
Okay.
Because religion held a lot of people back in that time, in that era. It held back art. It held back, you know,
it served its purpose.
It suppressed
a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. So I would want to live in a medieval time where people were free to think the way they wanted to.
Okay.
So, because a lot of people were suppressed. You know, not only creativity was suppressed, but people were suppressed in the medieval times. And so I'd say that if I could change something and live in that era, that's what it would be, is let people be more like the Renaissance meets medieval.
Mm-hmm.
So that's would that change your answer, or would it still be...
You know, I'm, if anything, I think that makes me want to go even further in the future.
Okay.
And just to see, you know, I guess in a sense that Futurama effect or mm-hmm. the, you know, Star Trek effect where, you know, there are just so many other species and colonies oh, yeah. and just, you know, I just want to see what else is out there. It's, I mean, it's not so much that I don't care about the past, but it definitely does not intrigue me as much as what's out there is left to be discovered rather than what's already has happened. Even if I could change some of the aspects of the past, I still would. I look more towards the future.
So then, what's one aspect of the future that would guarantee that you wanted to live in that era? Like, what's the one thing, like, try to make it a little more specific than just time travel. Space travel.
Okay.
Make it more like, if this was set up this way, like, if the government was this way, or if technology was this way, or if education was this way, that would make you guaranteed to want to live in that era.
You know, that is a tough one.
That's kind of like where I went with the religious persecution and stuff.
You know, that's the thing, because, I mean, it could really go one way or the other. It could be, you know, things could get more strict, or it could be really loose, but then it's kind of like, well, if it's too loose, then you potentially have a bit of anarchy.
Outlaw,
yeah. Yeah, but if it's too tight, then, you know, you have kind of these society, like, there are a lot of, like, futuristic movies, like mm-hmm. Like Equilibrium.
Is that the one with
Christian Bale and...
No, I don't think I've seen that
okay,
one.
Okay, so that's the one where...
I was thinking of Oblivion.
Okay, oh, I don't think I've seen that one. Okay. So, in Equilibrium, essentially everyone is on this required medication that suppresses their ability to feel.
Okay. Like,
so, and in the process, they also burn all forms of art, poetry, books.
Okay.
It suppresses... pretty much like the whole literary arts mm-hmm. thing, and so, you know, that is kind of, you know, pretty bleak, even though I thought it was a great movie.
And the people also in that time, because they're taking the medication, didn't know anything about it,
more or less. Yeah, I mean, they
didn't care about it anymore.
Yeah, that was their normal life.
Yeah,
so I think if I were to go in the future, it would have to be more like looser kind of, you know, there can't be a strong, like, government or religion
mm-hmm.
that has a strong power over one. So, it's similar to your answer. It's, you know, like how... actually, it's almost exactly like your answer then, except yours was in the past and there was no religion to have a meaningful stronghold to restrict creativity. I would also, I guess, to rip off your answer, in the future... It would have to be a future where there is no real suppressive power to restrict creativity.
I like that. I think that that's a realistic answer. I don't know if it's a realistic future, but... So let's narrow it down one more step before we move on and say, what's one piece of technology, thinking, of course, outside of the box, or inside the box, if that's what you want, that you would want... to go to the future to be able to experience or be able to use or be able to see.
Oh, so something that doesn't exist now?
Or it could be in the early stages, or it could be theoretical, or it could be...
Ooh, that is... let's see.
Yeah. I know, it's... I'm trying to think for myself.
And... yes, that's why he threw it in my direction first.
Because you have... Okay, so you have your common technologies that are theoretical now, such as time travel and space travel. So, like, uh-huh. not space travel, teleportation, right. You know, beam me up kind of thing, like we were talking about before we started recording. And that kind of stuff, sure, that's cool,
uh-huh.
but that's not something that I would care to just be like, let's go to the future to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Time travel, as interesting as it is, I think that it's not necessarily something that I would quote-unquote look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
If it's there, and if it was usable by me, sure, I'd go back and check things out, I'd go forward, but it's not something that I think that I would, that I'm looking forward to.
You know, I part of me wants to say, even though as potentially boring of a idea it could be, is just really fast transportation. So in a sense, you know, bullet trains can get you from one place to another pretty quick. I think there's one in the works for to connect San Francisco and LA.
Yeah.
I don't really know all the details, but supposedly it's supposed to be able to, you know, you should be able to go from one to the other in an hour.
Yeah.
I want to see what's the next step after that. You know, how can you get from San Francisco to LA in like 10 minutes?
Well, yeah, and that'd be interesting. So you're talking more about land. And I know you, it's a podcast, so you can't see me, but I put quotes up, land travel.
Okay,
yeah. You're talking about more land travel than...
Well, just travel in general. Just transportation. How can we speed things up?
So you'd like to see the evolution of transportation?
In other words, yeah, because, I mean, if you kind of look at things now, like, just basic transportation, if you're just driving from point A to point B, you have to deal with traffic, fuel, other drivers. So... How are these things going to be solved? Because if we're taking this into like a serious consideration, population is going to increase. There's going to be more cars on the road. There's going to be less fuel, more traffic, more pollution. Mm-hmm. How is this going to get solved? What's the solution to this? How are we going to become more efficient in traveling, not only in resources but also in time? How are we going to? Because I mean, there are people who commute 2-3 hours, you know, every day.
Yeah,
and I just throw more people on the road. That's going to become a 4 or 5 hour commute.
It's really,
how are we going to fix that?
It's really interesting because everything I'm hearing from you is like the near future.
I'm worried about today. I'm not living in the past.
Or the future. Or that far in the future. So realistically. That's interesting. I think that to go along with what I said earlier, if there was one thing, one technology that I would want to see... Maybe it's just because I'm thinking about this right now because I just talked about it, but would be that personal spaceship.
Okay.
That, you know, like, let's... And I don't mean Firefly, but I mean more like Cowboy Bebop. More like, let's get
the
in...
Jetsons?
Not quite as... Yeah.
You don't want it to fall up into a suitcase.
No. But in... So the difference between Firefly is... You know, you have your bigger ships, you have your freighters, you have your...
Okay.
Basically, the kind of, like, boats you have now. So think of it kind of like Star Trek, you know, and okay. Only they don't have the shuttles. So my idea would be, like, a jet.
Uh-huh.
But in space.
Okay.
Something like that. That would be something that I would want to see. And you see that in a lot of shows, but the reason I think Cowboy Bebop is because of the way they do it. It's more like they have their big ship... And then they're like, oh, but let me, you know, I need to land on Earth,
uh-huh.
Or on a planet, so let me get in my little ship and I can land on the planet.
Okay.
Or I need to go to this planet that's, you know, a couple light years away, and everyone on my ship doesn't want to go or can't go or for whatever reason, so I'm just going to take my own ship.
Okay, so in a sense, you could kind of look at it like as a ferry system.
Kind of.
Except you could just take off the boat, whatever.
More like a personal... It'd be more like I'm living on a cruise ship.
Okay.
And I have my own boat, long-distance boat, stored below that
okay.
I can take anytime.
Okay, I see what you're
so
doing.
That'd be more like what it is. Other than that, I actually... as much as I'm not into, like, weaponry and stuff like that... I would like to see what both will happen in the future with weapons, but not only like guns and stuff, but also close combat and melee weapons.
Well, what do you think? Okay, so here's an interesting idea then. Do you think weapons in the future become more lethal or more non-lethal?
I think, and this could just be the effect of TV on me, but I think both. I think that we're going to have something where it's like, but then we already have guns that are one-hit kill.
Yeah,
And the evolution of weaponry is a weapon is created, a defense is created for the weapon.
Right, it's
a new weapon is... Yeah, the arms race, perfect. So I think that we're going to see more deadly weaponry, but we're also going to see the evolution of the stun gun.
Right.
The evolution of the baton.
So more crowd-controlling type weapons.
But both.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that crowd-controlling weapons are going to become more norm for everyday use.
Mm-hmm. In the extreme cases, you have the extremely efficient
Or weapons like going back to like Star Trek and things like that. You know, you can set your phasers to either stun or kill.
Okay.
You know, it's like a 2-in-1 weapon.
That seems pretty dangerous.
Yeah,
I know. It's just a switch. It's like, oh, whoops, I forgot to switch that.
Yeah, I agree with that. So that, but even more so, I'd like to see if, you know, things like lightsabers are ever going to be something. If you're closer combat, you're, you know, because, okay, theoretically, we're going to go into space. We're going to move out to our colonies. There's not going to be that one-on-one fighting as much anymore. It's going to be more large scale.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see if...
Well, assuming it's not all just, you know, drones...
Yeah, that's true. That too. So it'll be interesting to see if there is going to be any of that. You know, like, we really need to invest this time and money in figuring out how to evolve the sword or the baton or...
You know, it's funny that you mentioned lightsaber. I remember watching a video on YouTube. I don't remember the title of it. It was a few months ago. It was with Michio Kaku, the theoretical physicist.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about.
And he goes into how to create a real lightsaber. And theoretically...
I think I saw that.
Yeah, theoretically he came up with a model to actually make one with today's technology. And he uses, like, ceramics and plasma because you can't really do that with actual light. Just because the way the properties of light, it just doesn't work. So instead, it's just a really, really hot baton,
which makes sense. Well, I know it was interesting to find out exactly how they did it, how they explained it in Star Wars, and it's never explained in the movies, but it's explained in, you know, the extended universe, and it's basically a certain crystal that they amplify light through.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. And the light, so that's what the lightsaber is the actual. What's also fun, or what's also cool, is they have the training sabers in the Star Trek universe that doesn't use those crystals, and it actually is like a laser, and it has a top and bottom. You can't, like, you know, like the lightsaber, you turn them off, and then it's just this, the hilt.
Right.
And this is like the whole thing. It stays, you know, 3 feet long, and then the light goes from the base to the top, and then you still have your weapon.
So it's kind of like a giant fluorescent tube.
Basically, yeah. And then there's a game called No More Heroes. I think it's on other stuff now. But he uses something very similar to that. And I'll have a picture of it in the show notes. But let me show Elliot a picture since...
That does kind of look like a fluorescent tube.
Yeah, and it's exactly... Okay, well, this one's kind of different because it looks like it's a gun too. But... And I'll have a picture of it in the show notes, as I said. But you know what? This sucks. Well, anyway, we'll move on. But oh, here we go. Here's a good example. So when he uses it, when he attaches it to his side, it's still that long. It's still as long as the sword ever is. And then as soon as he turns it on, basically the top of the sword stops the laser from going through.
Okay.
So it's not as powerful as a lightsaber, because lightsaber can cut through pretty much anything, you know, in the Star Wars universe. But it's stronger than the sword because it is heat and light. And I think this is something that could be possibly done too.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've already, I mean, lasers can really harm. You know, high powered lasers can actually burn through things, and, you know, they're not, I mean, you can't like point a laser at something and it's like goes right through the wall. But it's close. It burns through the wall.
You know, on the same note, though, I do kind of question how practical would melee weapons be in the future. Because if everyone is, you know, with the power of ranged weapons and projectiles, it's kind of, it's like the old saying, like, you know, don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
And then, but then you think about, you know, possible futures. What about a post-apocalyptic world where... You know,
I guess you don't run out of ammo with a sword.
Yeah, and you know, it's like ammo is hard to come by, but a sword, you know. So it's that whole purpose, you know.
Right.
Is there a purpose for it? Is there a reason to spend the time and money and resources on creating these things?
Okay. So it's the right tool for the job.
Yeah, basically. So you figure, you know, that's the whole thing with the future. All right, so we're running out of time, so we're going to move on. So we're going to stick with. You going 50 to 100 years in the future.
Okay.
Yep. Me going back to medieval time.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, what if you were to go to that era and we'll both discuss each other's with the same knowledge you have at this moment. Same lifestyle you have at this moment.
Well,
so okay. We'll discuss yours first since it's a little easier, I think. Or not easier, but a little less complicated.
You know, so, okay. If we take into account the book I read, Feed,
mm-hmm.
With the assumption that that is coming to fruition, where everyone is essentially how, kind of how the book goes into how, stumbling on my words here. Okay, so, if everyone is just very good at looking things up, because that's kind of the method of doing things at this time, where, you know, and people aren't really good problem solvers. They're just good at looking things up. They're really attached to media and things like that.
Uh-huh.
I think, I mean, not to sound too arrogant, but I think I would have a very powerful mind in that time. Because
that's
interesting. Because I am not as technologically dependent on those people.
On those things.
On those technologies. I would have better problem-solving skills, better critical thinking skills. However, I run into the problem where those skills may be more applicable to now, where the problems 50-something years from now will be significantly different.
I guess it goes back to that romanticizing the time, because you think about it like, oh, if someone who had a strong mind, strong creative thinking, strong critical thinking would go into a time where that stuff is no longer part of humanity,
right,
then, you know, you can be that one person to change things.
Yeah,
and that's romanticizing it, and that's kind of what you're talking about. But on the other hand, on the other side, you also mentioned that, you know, would that actually happen? Is it even needed anymore?
Yeah.
So
in other words, am I going to have 21st century skills in the 20th? Are my 21st century skills going to be applicable in the 22nd century?
Yeah, that's interesting. Again, I'm glad you went forward for our discussion, because with mine, you can't really think that way. So that's interesting. So then I would go ahead and say, I think so. You're both worried and, I don't know the word, but you're kind of like thinking both ways. It could be a good thing, and it might not be.
I'm trying looking at it from multiple angles. How, you know, I could potentially have a major advantage,
mm-hmm.
but there's also a possibility that advantage is meaningless in that situation.
And there's also a possibility that in the year, in 50 years, 80 years, that humanity will only continue to become more critical.
And that is true.
The 21st century skills are now going to be something that's taught in kindergarten.
Right, yeah, I could be the times.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the whole Star Trek world is, right. You know, everyone's advanced, brains are more advanced.
But
and,
see, that's why I kind of mentioned that if we're going with the assumption that people are going to be more technologically dependent, then I think it would be a relatively safe assumption that those skills will start to diminish.
They could, definitely. I mean, that's something that, I mean, with the movement, I don't know. I feel like there's a movement now, and I don't know if it's big enough to impact the future, but I feel like in the last 5 years or so, there's this movement of let's not become so dependent on technology that that's going to happen. I think that there's that thought out there. Those people, there's a large group of people that are like, let's not let that happen.
Well, actually, I read an article about Waldorf schools.
Uh-huh. Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, these are private schools. I'm not sure what all locations there are.
I know there's some in California. That's
but,
all I know.
They're pretty much, you know, K through 12. And I know for the elementary school level, I think part of middle school, there are classrooms that have more or less no technology. There's no computers. They discourage students from using technology at home. And the big catch about this is a lot of the parents of these private school students are people in the technology field.
It's because one of the schools is in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it's in Los Altos.
Yeah, oh yeah, there you go.
So, you know, at first it seems a little bit weird. It's like, you know, all these, you know, kids from rich families and they're being sent off to schools and not using technology.
Yeah.
But then when, you know, after thinking about it for a while, it actually kind of makes sense. Anyone can go on Google and look something up.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually sit there and see a problem and figure out how to solve this problem, that's not something, you know, it's, you know, to use the, what's the term, a proverb,
uh-huh.
you know, it you can look at Google as giving a man a fish, and going without technology is teaching them how to fish.
Okay. On the same hand, okay, so yeah, I agree with that. And I think that going along with your proverb, I think there's that whole middle ground. Right. I think it's to change it up a little bit, it's giving a starving man a fish so he survives the night and then teaching him to fish the next day.
Okay. Yeah.
That's where I think that there's that balance.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, that's one of the reasons that I still, I read as much as I do. Even though a lot of times I'm reading on my tablet, I don't think of it, I'm reading on technology. I just think I'm reading the words, you know, and that's why a lot of times, unless I'm in a mood where I don't want to think, I'll try to problem solve myself. Problems that I have in front of me before I go to Google. And I think it's that we're just one person, you know, or we're a group. Like on this podcast, it's the two of us.
Right.
If neither of us has any idea on the answer to something, that's when we'll go, okay, well, Google can help us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think technology in that sense is much, much better. Well, than saying, well, we don't know, I'm sorry, you look it up yourself.
Well, the thing or about that also, though, is, you know, you have to take into account our age. Because we, you know, so if we're going to compare it to, like, those Waldorf schools, they do use computers, but it's not towards more of middle school.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that's roughly when I started really using computers around middle school.
Yeah.
Especially the internet, just because it wasn't
readily available like this.
Exactly, until right around 7th or 8th grade. So I did have to go through the first 6-7 years of school figuring things out on my own, or just based on what was taught in
and
school.
Also, going with that, I think that also keeps teachers more accountable. Because a teacher, you know, doesn't have to prepare for every single topic now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, for example, with me, in the class that I help students with their homework, I don't have to know what their homework is before they get there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they come to me and they have a problem that they can't figure out, I can just be like, well, you know what? Let me go look it up. And this is particular with math because I'm not very good at math.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, although it didn't work out because of, because you weren't around, but
yeah.
There was that day where I could not solve a problem. I could not even figure out how to help the student. And so I text Elliot. I'm like, hey, you around? Because I have this problem for you to solve. But that's an example of like, teachers don't have to be held accountable anymore.
Right.
As accountable. You know, it's like in English class, if I was to teach an English class right now, I wouldn't have to know every single definition to every single question or every single answer to every single question that a student might ask.
Mm-hmm.
I have to know what I need to teach them. And if there is questions, then I should know the basic answers. But it's like, what if a student asks me something like, well, I don't know an example, but like on topic, but something that I didn't think about. You know, it's like a teacher used to have to make sure, and I remember this, comparing and contrasting from when I was in school to now,
mm-hmm.
The teachers just don't prepare nearly as much as they used to.
Huh.
And I think that's because they don't have to be prepared to answer all those questions on their own. You know, granted, there's always been teacher textbooks that have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times teachers would teach around those, and that's fine, but now it's like, if a student asks a question, a teacher can say, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to find out for you by the end of class. Before, you couldn't do that because if a teacher was in class, they couldn't leave class. They couldn't go talk to another teacher. They couldn't go to the library. They couldn't, you know, look up the encyclopedia. It would have to be either they knew it or they didn't. So that's another thing. But we're really off topic there. So let's go to the medieval times.
All right.
Going back to the medieval times, knowing what we know now, having the same lifestyle we have now, trying to live back then. So this is
Same lifestyle or knowledge? No.
having the lifestyle we have now, trying to live back then.
Okay.
So in other words, our use of computers, TV, technology.
Right.
So it's kind of funny that this happened because we had came up with this topic weeks ago that we were going to do it. We were going to record it today. I was like, you know what? It's okay. I could go back then. I don't need technology. I don't need internet. I don't need TV.
Didn't need toilet paper.
Yeah. I can get through it. And then I went a week without internet and TV.
Yeah.
Granted, I think that I would be okay. Because if I was back then, again, if assuming I was a scribe or a artist or something creative, I think I could get by fine without technology. It would be hard. And I know there'd be that period of like, I can't believe I don't have my phone. I don't have my computer or whatever. But I think I'd be fine. What wouldn't be fine to me, I don't think I could go back to that time and be just a normal person.
You couldn't be a farmer?
I couldn't be a farmer. Couldn't be a peasant. Couldn't be even royalty. Because I would just be like, I don't know. I like my lifestyle now better than that.
You know of a different life.
Yeah. And a better life. Again, if I could write all day and read my writing and perform and publish, or not necessarily publish, but just get it out there, you know, I think I'd be okay. But it's that if I had any other lifestyle in that era, I think I'd be miserable.
Hmm.
So assuming that you were in that time and you weren't prosecuted for being Chinese, what do you think?
You know, I know for myself that I can do okay without technology.
Yeah.
I can go without a computer. I can go without my phone, my tablet, all that stuff. So I think it really would depend on what else is there to do.
Exactly.
So it depends on the time period. So if I were to, say, we'll throw out a date.
I don't know.
We'll throw out a year or even a century.
1600s.
1600s. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, every time I think to the past, I think of war.
Yeah, well, there was a lot. But okay, think about this. You are a lower middle class worker in a kingdom that...
Okay, actually, let me interrupt you.
Uh-huh.
One thing, if I'm going to romanticize this about this a little bit.
Well, if you're...
Part of me has always thought being a blacksmith would be just the coolest thing ever. Just to make weapons and armor, that would be so awesome. It'd probably be... I mean, I know it is extremely difficult and extremely physically demanding, but I always just thought that would be so cool.
I will say, it's funny you bring that up, because we were talking about the caste system and everything and how, you know, you can't really go from a peasant to royalty. Blacksmiths are one of those few peasants that actually are not looked upon as peasants, usually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your farmers and everything. Those are like, oh, those are farmers. You know, they just provide us with their food. But blacksmiths have always been like, even though they might have been born to, you know... something.
You can always be someone's apprentice.
Yeah, and if you become an apprentice, then it's like, oh, a blacksmith apprentice, and then you become a blacksmith, and then your whole family line is like moves up. So that's interesting you say that. That's a perfect example of you know.
Well, I wasn't thinking of my family. I just think it'd be cool to make swords.
And I agree. I agree. Blacksmiths would be awesome. Would be an awesome job back then. So then you really think that you could give up all your technology right now? Never have another phone, never have another piece of technology beyond what was in that era. Go back to then and be happy and content just being a blacksmith or in living in that era. Knowing that in the future, this is what you would actually be living.
I think so. I want to say yes, and I am basing this off of those, I wouldn't say binges, but those times where I'm more or less cut off from technology, like when I go camping. You know, I'm going 4 or 5 days without technology, and I really don't miss it. I mean, I'll miss some of the aspects of life, like I mentioned, toilet paper. I'm rather fond of toilet paper.
Toilet paper is kind of... But you could always just go in the river and just shake it off. Just shake it off.
Yeah. So it's more of... So I wouldn't say technology, but there are, you know, certain aspects of modern day life that I would miss. However, I think I could realistically do that.
It's funny because I didn't even think about the other aspects of the change. I was just thinking technology because I could. I mean, whenever I leave the house, like for a long weekend or a vacation or something, I'm always at the mentality of, you know what? I'm going to use technology as little or I'm going to use internet technology as little as possible. I don't want to be connected to the outside. I want to be in the now. I want to be living in the moment. So that's why I rarely go on my phone when I'm out. I rarely chat. I rarely, you know, go online. And especially with camping, it's like majority of the time I use my phone, even if I have reception and service, majority of the time I use my phone for the time. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know? And even then, camping, it's like, oh, it's still bright out. I'm good, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely something about camping. It's like, oh, it's dark. I'm getting tired. Oh, it's 8:45. Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, I too think that, thinking about it, yeah, it's more of the you know, being able to, well, even getting around. I think I could deal without having a car and having a horse instead. I think I'd be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the modern, you know, dentistry and health, that's the stuff that would probably...
Food.
That's the kind of thing that would probably be more harder to live without than technology.
So, I mean, technology, I definitely feel I can forego. It's really not that big of a deal. I don't feel the urge to take a selfie every 3.5 minutes. But there, it's just the things that just make life so much simpler now that we definitely take for granted. Those are the things that I would probably miss. Like clean water. I'm rather fond of clean water.
Yeah.
Light.
Yeah. All right, so we have about 9 minutes left to finish this topic before we end the show. So the last thing we had talked about, last thing I wanted to talk about was, let's just change it up a bit and now go to that relive.
Okay.
If you could take your knowledge of everything that's happened up to this point in your life, would you go back to a certain age or time in your life and relive your life? Assuming it's only one way. You could go back and not forward. So in other words, if you went back to when you were 1 year old, mm-hmm. you'd have to relive everything from your 1 year birthday up till now. You couldn't like go back to one, change something, and come back to your life now.
Okay. But I can change things along the way.
You can change things.
Okay, but I still have to relive the entire journey.
But you got to remember, you're only a kid. So how much can you really change?
Okay, but do I have the knowledge?
You have the knowledge.
Okay, so, you know, that's one thing I've thought about in the past. Like, what if, like, almost like a movie idea or a book idea, if someone were to just randomly wake up and find themselves in the body of...
themselves
as a child, knowing what they know, and let's say, you know, if they want to prevent a major disaster or attack or whatever, or just in other words, alter an event, drastically alter an event, or even prevent it.
Okay.
How would you even go about that? So let's say
that's what I mean. As you're a kid, especially if you want to go back to something like here in California, 1984 earthquake.
Right.
89, sorry. 84 is the year we were born. 89 earthquake.
Right.
And you knew specifically that there was, you know, that you're going back, and if someone could, if you could just tell people about it,
uh-huh.
that you would save thousands of lives.
Okay. So I thought about how to approach this.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say I go back to, okay, so that earthquake happened when I was about 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't quite 5 yet. So, the way I would do this, assuming I still have like all the knowledge that I have accumulated, I would go to my siblings. I'd choose one sibling.
Because they're older than you.
Yeah. I would choose... All my siblings are older than me. So, let's see. When I was 4, they were 14, 16, 18? 18 or 19?
Okay.
I would probably go with the middle one, with my oldest brother.
Okay.
I think I could convince him that something was up. And I base this on, you know, a 4-year-old would only know a certain amount of stuff. Their vocabulary is very limited. Mm. Their knowledge of things is very limited. So I would just bombard him with information a 4-year-old would not know. Mm-hmm. Just how things work, just various subjects, you know, biology, math, history, just bombard him, convince him that something's not right with me. in a sense that I'm not just a typical 4-year-old. I know something. And work from him and work to my other siblings and from pretty much earn allies. I want to get them as allies. and then just work from there. Just convince more and more people. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, there's this is not. I'm not a typical 4-year old. Something's up. Hey, there's an upcoming event that you might want to be aware of.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So I think I'd take a similar approach, but my approach would be so let's get back on the subject. So we're running out of time.
Oh, right.
So the subject was, if you could go back and relive from a certain point in your life, would you, and why would you?
I think I absolutely would. I, ironically, also at about age 4.
Okay.
Mainly because that's when I entered kindergarten. So I feel that had I done things differently, mm-hmm. In my school life, you know, from K through 12, pretty much it's kind of like how some people say they wish they could relive high school again so they can, you know, do better.
Yeah.
I'd rather relive the whole thing, okay. Not just high school, but everything before that, and do better.
Okay.
And by doing better, you know, I pretty much, in other words, I'm taking into account the mistakes I've made and trying to learn them. And if I could go back and, you know, not make some of those mistakes.
Okay. So totally get that. And I agree. So let's throw a wrench into that.
Oh, geez.
If you go back, you lose that many years in the end of your life. So you go back to when you're 4.
Okay, then, yeah. Maybe I'll just relive high school.
26 years at the end of your life.
I'll relive high school. How about that?
So you would basically lose how many years?
No, actually, you know what? I'll
Or no, let's not say lose that many. Let's say you lose half that many.
Okay.
That's
a lot.
So you'd lose 13 years of your life if you went back to when you were 4.
Yeah, okay. Even then, I think I'd still say I would go back to high school, so I'd lose about 7 years, maybe.
Okay.
And really just bust my ass in high school, do well, and just set myself on a better path. And I think a lot of people can agree to that. Just if you find a turning point in your life where you could, if you had done a little bit better, all the events following that would have been significantly different.
What's funny about my answer is that I would actually go back to a time where I did have a turning point where my life, my school life and my social life could have either gone really wrong, or like it did and gone pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to go back to when my school life, like what affects me now, and change that, it would have to be like kindergarten. But I would actually rather go back to probably 7th grade,
mm-hmm.
Around there, 7th, 8th grade, maybe even like right before 7th grade started, and relive from there. Mainly because that's when I started doing good in school. So I could just continue that trend, you know. I wouldn't have to worry about school too much because I already have all that knowledge. Of course, I would have to, you know, still work to get especially in like math.
Right.
But it would be more like I would take advantage of learning the things that aren't or using my knowledge of things that aren't academic to make my life better.
Mm-hmm.
Such as social and stuff like that. But besides, also if I go back to that year into my life, first thing I would do is, and I would convince people I was psychic. That's always been here we're getting kind of deep into the psyche, but that's always been, I guess if you could say, like, you know, what's one superpower you would want? It would be to be psychic.
I wouldn't say psychic, but I would say I've always thought mind control.
Mind control is another one, but if you're psychic, you don't really need mind control. But if you have mind control, you don't need to be psychic.
Yeah, there you go.
Because you could just like tell someone, tell me what you're thinking. Tell me what, right. You know.
Or just, hey, just go do this. I don't really want to read your mind and figure out how I can get you to do this. Just go do it.
Well, you know, yeah. Well, I'm not going to get into that. But yeah, psychic would probably be it. So to wrap it up real quick, it sounds like although we're both pretty satisfied with the current state of technology and even our current life, we would definitely venture into other times and venture back into our own past. Does that generally sums it up?
I would say so. I definitely do look more forward to the future than the past. But There are things about the past that I could appreciate.
And I also think it's funny, even though we brought up the, you know, going back into our own lives to change an event, neither of us settled on that. That's just like, that's something that, sure, I mean, if I went back, it might be something I did, but I feel like it's like those things are already happened, and the world's okay, you know.
Right.
So I think that, you know, if I did go back, you know, in like 1984, I would prepare myself and as many people as I could. I mean, 1984.
I was going to say, I'm like,
1989, I would prepare as many people as I could for the earthquake, but I wouldn't, like, my whole mission isn't to go back and save thousands of people.
You know,
from the
but earthquake. even though it's a little bit of a tangent, something I've thought about in the past, if you could go back and save even just one person, how do you know that's really for the greater good?
Exactly.
Because how do you know that person wouldn't go on to do something more horrific or have children that do things that are even more horrific?
And how do you know that that won't change your own future so much that you no longer want to live in the future that you created?
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, you like, if we left this future to go back right now, it's like, we're pretty content. We're doing okay. You know, there's nothing horribly wrong in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We go back and we change one thing. All of a sudden, we're 30 years old again.
I think that's called the butterfly effect, or
it's
something like that.
It's combining like the butterfly effect with the it has something to do with time space. It's two,
like,
two different theories.
You kill like a mosquito in the past, they can alter.
I guess that's a butterfly effect. Yeah. So yeah, then there you go, and then all of a sudden we get to 29, 30 years old again, and it's like, I don't want to live in this. I'd rather have my old life.
Yeah, it's like, oh, apparently oxygen isn't really a thing anymore.
All right, so real quick to introduce our new segment this week is, it's going to be called Off Topic Picks. Cue music that we don't have yet and probably won't this episode. So, DTD, there you go. So we're going to have a new subject, or a new topic each week called Off Topic Picks. What it is each host, be it me or Elliot or guest hosts that we have on, will bring up something that they want to share with the audience. It could be anything from a novel to a video game to a phone, web series, TV show, movie. It could be anything we want to share with you and each other. So I'm going to go ahead and let Elliot take the first lead this week. So go ahead, Elliot. What is your off-topic pick this week?
All right. So I started a book for my English class. It's called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. And the book is essentially that. It's about outliers, but looking at it in the sense of people. How people are different outliers and different outliers in different areas. So, for example, it talks about how hockey players that a lot of the professional hockey players are all born between January and March.
Interesting.
Reason being is that when they're young and they start into those training programs, there are certain age cutoffs. Not really age cutoffs, but also birth date cutoffs. So the ones that are like just after the cutoff, they have to wait an extra year. And by waiting the extra year, they get 12 extra months of training.
Oh, interesting.
So it also talks about how students who have birthdays right before the age cutoff. So, for example, my birthday is on December 1st, and the age cutoff for enrollment for me was December 3rd. So that's why I started kindergarten when I was 4 instead of 5. And supposedly, everyone who...
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So supposedly, those students who get enrolled early rather than later tend to have a pretty significant disadvantage. And the thing is, it's one of those things that's really difficult, if not impossible, to outgrow.
Yeah.
The big thing about that really caught my eye about this book, they mentioned it in the introduction. No, it wasn't the introduction. It was the first chapter. They're explaining what, you know, the book's about. And they mention they're going to investigate why Asians are so good at math. And I've always kind of wondered about that, because math has always been one of my stronger subjects.
Uh-huh.
Just significantly stronger than most any other subject. And so I haven't gotten to that chapter yet, but, and I'm actually a little bit curious how they settled on the title of this chapter. It's called Rice Patties and Math Tests.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, okay. I haven't gotten there yet, but I'm interested to see what they have to say about that.
That will be interesting. And just to, real quick, to clarify, the whole name of the novel, since I looked it up so I can have the show notes, is Outliers, The Story of Success. And as with everything on this segment, I will have a link to it on the show notes. So my off-topic pick this week is called Neil Patrick Harris, Choose Your Own Autobiography.
Huh.
It is also a book, which is kind of weird that we both picked books this week. But it is a it is written by Neil Patrick Harris and is actually mostly an autobiography.
About Doogie Howser?
Yeah. I'm sure Doogie Howser is in it.
Huh.
But basically, if you remember the old Choose Your Own Adventure books...
no, I don't.
Really?
No.
Oh, I love Choose Your Own Adventure books. Basically, the concept is you'd read a chapter. At the end of the chapter, it would tell you if you want... Like, okay, let me use an example from one of, like... old book. I remember it's like, so you read this chapter about this adventurer who's going to find the dragon.
Okay.
And it's like, you come up to a cave and you see the sleeping dragon inside. And then it's like, that's the end of the chapter. And it's like, do you go in?
Okay. I think
there's
different sections. Of
yeah. Do you, like... If you want to assault the dragon while it's sleeping, go to page 198. If you want to, retreat to like regroup with your friends and attack together, go to page 205.
Yeah. When were these books around?
90s.
Okay. So that's
maybe
kinda,
even early 90s, late 80s.
Okay. I think that's kind of interesting because you were exposed to these type of books,
uh-huh.
and then you went and majored in English. I wasn't exposed to these types of books.
Oh, interesting.
So I wonder if there's a correlation there because that sounds something I'd be totally into,
but
it's not something I was ever aware of.
Yeah. So back to this book, Neil Patrick Harris, Choose Your Own Autobiography. So it starts out like the I have not actually purchased it yet. Thanks to the Kindle, I just downloaded the sample, and mainly because I'm like, I love Neil Patrick Harris, but I'm like, what's this going to be like, you know? So I downloaded the sample and I read the through a couple chapters yesterday. So just to kind of give what it's like, the first chapter starts out like, you emerge from the womb, or from the darkness, and you are Neil Patrick Harris. The first person you meet is your mother. And that's how the old adventure books, it was all you, and the first person you meet is, of course, your mother, blah, 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 Harris, you know. And then the second person you meet is your father, who's smiling at you, and then it's like,
I figured a doctor would be in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, it didn't say doctor. And then it also introduces you to his brother. So it's like, you know, not only that, but in the first... in like two paragraphs, it not only says like you meet your mother, but it's like what your mother's like through your life, and then it's like you meet your father, what's your father's like, brother, what's your father's like, and then it goes, but right now you're just a newborn in bloody goo or something like that, and then it's like, and then the choice at the end of the first chapter is, do you want to have a good childhood or a bad one?
Oh.
And then
wow.
So it's like that's awesome.
Wow.
And then so it's really awesome. I'm guessing it's like 75% autobiography, 25% fiction.
Because
he can't, you know, I mean, he has to have those choices. And something common in Choose Your Own Adventures was you pick the wrong thing, your character, you die.
Huh. Okay.
So I mean, I'm guessing that it definitely could be that. You know, he split it up. Here's my good memories, here's my bad memories.
Right, exactly. Because, you know, no one could really say that their childhood was purely, you know, positive or purely negative. Well, I mean, you could have pretty terrible childhoods. But in this sense, I would imagine it is, like, having not read it, I wouldn't say it was 75% true. I'd say it was probably more like 98% true.
It could be.
And like 2% embellishment.
I'm guessing that he's going to throw in those curveballs, though, where it's like, knowing Neil Patrick Harris, it's like, just example, I don't know if it's in the like, but he chose to go to a party with a friend. He OD'd that night.
Hmm.
You know, I can just see him putting that kind of thing in there, like in a comedic way.
Okay.
So that's what I mean by obviously... Because they have to have those dead ends, and then it's like,
right.
And then it's going to be like at the bottom it'll say,
or he got eaten by the dragon.
Yeah, exactly. But I did notice that... I did notice, actually, on the end of the chapter that says if you want to have a terrible childhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the choice. Would you like to relive the childhood in a positive way? Or would you like to move on to the teenage years?
Oh, okay.
So I think that, like, it's like the... I don't know. But I haven't read through the whole thing, but I'm really excited to read it. It's going to be very interesting because Neil Patrick Harris is I love him. And it's only 304 pages. So you figure, and I only say only because Choose Your Own Adventures are usually, if you read them from front to back, or I'm sorry, if you read them from beginning of story to end one time, it's really short. Mm-hmm. So 300 pages is probably a little longer than your average Choose Your Own Adventure from when I was a kid. For obvious reason, it's not for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably... I'm guessing it's probably going to be between 150 to 200 pages if you read through it one time. So, but then the fun of Choose Your Own Adventures is going back and choosing something different.
Right.
Either in the moment, like you get to the end of the chapter and it's like...
No, well, do-over.
Yeah, either do-over or I'd like to just see what it's like on the other chapter. It's going to be very interesting. And what's cool about it is... if you get the physical book, obviously it's just going to be like turn to this page. But the Kindle version, when you get to the end of the chapter... It actually says, you know, click here to go to this chapter or to this scenario. So it's really cool. I definitely plan on purchasing the full book. And
I might have to get that too, actually.
Yeah. It's a little pricey, even for the ebook. It's $11, but I think it's worth it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. With that said, we are over our time this week, and it's only episode 2.
Yeah. More to come.
Yeah. Just to say, you know, usually we're going to try to keep the episode between 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, there might be times where we go over because we have an exciting topic. This time, I think that lesson learned, we just tried to fit too much into it because we know about those rabbit holes and we went down a lot. This one's pretty deep. Yeah. So I think.
Spread out.
Yeah. I think it's just we try to cram too much into a single episode, but that's fine. It was a good episode, and I hope everyone liked it. If you'd like to let us know, if you'd like to tell us what you thought, you can go email us at almostrelevantpodcast@gmail.com, as well as the temporary web address for our podcast, which actually you'll always be able to get to our podcast through this web address, but it's jeremycollier.com/almostrelevant. So that's it. I guess we can say what the next episode is going to be since it's pretty obvious. We're going to do Christmas episode next.
Yay!
Yeah, we're not too enthusiastic about it because of the date we're recording, but you don't need to worry about that. We're going to be nice and happy Christmas spirit once we record that episode. See you.
I mean, it is the season. It's been the season since, like, October 14th.
Yeah, I know. We're going to have merriment in us because, well... Plan on grabbing a few beers, but that's beside the point. So thank you for joining us. Please email us. Go check out the website. We will be on iTunes probably by the time the Christmas episode is out. We will be on iTunes if you are interested in that, if you're interested in subscribing on iTunes. And other than that, we will have a Facebook. So by the Christmas episode, we'll have a Facebook. Well... Check out our website for the Facebook if you're excited to like us on Facebook. If not, then listen for it in the Christmas episode. Have a great week, 2 weeks, since we're bi-weekly. And do you have anything else to add? I'm just kind of rambling. I don't know why.
No, it's just I think you guys will look forward to the next episode.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Have a great week, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Opening song with Our Wind in Our Sails, provided by Waleed Fighali. Ending song, Steampunk Girl, provided by John Emilio at johnemilio.com. And blast the cure and the snuffs, puts a flask to her lips, takes exit 22, and pulls in her parking space, climbs up the fire escape, steps into a bedroom. Crashes onto her bed, brings stockings from her leg. She looks in the mirror and thinks that it's time to start another life. So she's putting on her goggles and a bowler hat. She checks her pocket watch, adjusts her rocket back. She laces
mountains, taking a trip on a steam-powered chicken. It's the Geops of Flight to a sci-fi convention. Now it's her intention to finish her novel, then go back to school and learn to live again. So she's putting on her goggles and a bowler hat. She checks her pocket watch and just a rocket back. She laces buckle boots and puts her makeup on. She grabs her leather coat and a Tesla gun. Used to be a gawker, now she's a steamboat girl. Now she's a steamboat. She used to be a gawker, but now